The conversation started for Kia Sorento Drive Car of the Year. Sam Edman, number one sports breaking newsman in the world, wanders in.
Hardest working man in the world,
and
too.
Doing a great job on afternoons. I never miss it.
Hey, Gary, good to be with you. Hello, Tim. Although I had no idea how much a pot cost. Did you get to the bottom of that, please?
Well, was it five? You're out of touch.
Five clams?
More. 550.
What?
Are you not a beer drinking man either?
Oh, if I am, I just go down to my local bottle shop there instead, and I get my brown bag and I go home. I don't hang around at
the
pub.
Be careful, right? Because I was accused of being well out of touch. Oh. What about a
carton
of milk?
No, I just tap and go like Tim does.
I'm a tap and go.
I'm a tap and goer. Whatever they tell me it is, I go. I've probably been ripped off numerous times over the journey.
Gary, I don't know if you heard the spot that I did with Kingy and Sam last night.
I never miss it.
I got asked a question about something to do with Turkish. What was it? Turkish?
A Turkish singe. Have you ever
had
one
of
them? Do
you know what a Turkish singe is?
No.
You've been to a Turkish bath, though, haven't you?
No.
A Turkish
singe. Have you been to a Russian bath?
Russian bath. You had a Turkish delight. Have you had a Turkish delight?
I hate turkey.
This way, okay. But what is a Turkish? What is it a Turkish?
Well, we got talking about it because I went to the barber yesterday. I was well overdue for a haircut. I always seem to need a haircut when lockdown hits, and I hadn't got around to getting in there since
looks
it
good,
ended. So it was
a nice fade you got going.
It was horrific, and everything about it was horrific. There's no fade here, Tim. And I went into the barber, and as I'm getting older, I've noticed that not so much the nose, but the ear hair, Gary's become a bit of a problem.
Ear hair?
Yeah, just getting longer as I get older. I think I never had this. What is this, an old man's problem?
I don't know, but you've got to plait your nose here.
Nah, you should do it. You've got to do what KB started to do a little bit late in the piece. Just comb them over.
Well, I was put onto the Turkish singe, which is where they light a flame. They've been doing it in Turkey for centuries, the barbers. They light a flame. It's a naked flame, and they sort of whack your earlobe, and they singe the hairs.
Well, do it to me and be up like a bushfire.
Well, a few messages came through yesterday. It's just the old Bic lighter will get the job done at home. I'm not sure it would, but I just wondered if Wisp, being a connoisseur of manscaping, whether
I'm not. I'm not the manscaping man.
You are.
No, don't even start this.
Yes, you are.
I'm happy to put my hand up to a lot of things. I am not the three men in this room right now.
Right.
I am not the manscaper.
Ooh, is it just
natural? I'm looking at the man.
Is you naturally scaped?
I am looking at the manscaper.
I'm not a man. Look at me.
Have a look
manscaper.
At you.
What have I scaped?
You go. You've got lotions for this and lotions for that.
He's a lotioner.
That's not manscaping.
Okay, well, you're the lotioner.
Because you use lotion.
What's going on in the world of footy at the moment?
Are we
going
to have people at the footy this week?
Well, we'll start with the crowd, shall we? We will have people at the football. That's to be determined today, finally. Now, as we reported yesterday, it's sounding increasingly likely that the health authorities here in Victoria will allow a 50% attendance at sporting events this weekend, but, and it's a pretty significant but, with a cap of 25,000. So that means 25,000 at the MCG, 25,000 at Marvel Stadium, and it would be around 5,000 at John Cain Arena for Game 3, of course, the NBL Finals, with Melbourne United playing for the title against the Wildcats. And a maximum of around or just under 15,000 could attend the A-League Grand Final in this scenario at Amy Park between Melbourne City and Sydney FC.
That just doesn't make sense to me on this account, and that is that if you're allowed the same number of people in Marvel Stadium as the MCG, the capacity for the MCG is, 100,000?
Mm.
Marvel's, 55?
So they'll have 44% capacity.
Yes. Why wouldn't you... wouldn't you allow more people, or why wouldn't it be less people at Marvel or more people at the MCG?
They went with 25%.
There has been some real angst behind the scenes on this. So the health department actually proposed 25% across the board on Monday night, and there was some real pushback there. So it's going the distance. The AFL were in talks for a lot of yesterday with the health department there at the Victorian government. So we're thinking it's 50% with a 25,000 cap.
So
the maximum you can have in a facility is 25,000 people. So for Marvel Stadium, that is 50%.
Which is, 44, they said in the paper, but you might be much better.
And then the MCG, obviously, 25,000 is 25,000.
Okay, so I'm with you now.
So that's how it would work. Obviously, it's a big win. It's not a great result for the MCG, but it is a big win for John Cain Arena and the NBL Finals. And it is a massive win for the A-League if it plays out like that, because it means that game. And the A-League boss, Glenn O'Rourke, has put it on record that moving that game is a possibility. That game will be played under those parameters in Melbourne. Correct.
But how does it sit now with the whole Sydney red zone situation?
Yeah, which was released last night. Well, there's exemptions for everything. I mean, teams can apply for exemptions.
Even if they a player comes out of the red zone.
Yeah, exemptions exist. Yep, exemptions exist in the fine print, which I've read again this morning. Okay. So Melbourne, we know, finished on top. They have hosting rights. They lost last year's grand final to the same opponent at Bankwest Stadium in Sydney. They are absolutely desperate to have this game, as you can expect, at Amy Park. And then there's the fixture. So I know you're going to talk to Tom Harley later. The Swans and the Giants, they're going to wake up in Melbourne this morning. They got the call yesterday afternoon around 4 o'clock, 4.30. You've got 4 hours to get to the airport. You've got to leave Sydney given the increasing uncertainty there. So they will now abide by what's called supplementary protocols while they're in Melbourne, which is you're only allowed to leave the house or the hotel for essential reasons, of which training is obviously one. So the Giants are expecting to stay for at least 2 weeks, given they play the D's, Gary, at the MCG in round 16. Their round 15 game, obviously, as we now know, has been moved against Hawthorn from Giants Stadium to the MCG, but in the same time slot, Sunday 1:10, which has been the AFL's determination for all of this year. So the Victorian South Australian border is expected to relax on Friday. So there is hope that the Swans, who are here, of course, won't have the same level of protocols put upon them for that game at the Adelaide Oval against the Power that Collingwood and Geelong did. So that Sydney-Port Saturday night game is still expected to become a twilight game. So Sydney can get there
in Adelaide
and get back by the Adelaide Airport's 11 o'clock curfew. There is a very, very, very small outside chance that it could be played in Victoria this game. So
GMHBA Stadium's on standby.
Yeah, we'll wait and see what happens with the border there.
And the Age reporting today, you talk about this, and then there's another page to all this, and that is the cost to the game. They're reporting that the last 3 weeks alone, Gil McLaughlin has spoken to the club president, the last 3 weeks alone has cost the game $15 million. Another $15 million.
Charter flights, accommodation.
Yep.
Another one. Yeah. Another $15
million. So Fremantle plays Collingwood at Marvel on Saturday at 4:35. While that start time might change a bit, that game's good to go, but it's at the other end.
Sorry,
the
say that again. Fremantle.
Fremantle plays Collingwood at Marvel. Saturday.
Yeah, what time?
4:35 as per the fixture at the moment. Now, that start time might change a little bit, but it's good to go. It's at the other end that the Dockers have some uncertainty. So there could be some home quarantine for Freo once they get back to Perth, depending on how that border looks by the weekend. So I spoke to the Fremantle Dockers last night. They said the details were still unknown. They were still being sorted through on that. So the fixture will be finally confirmed today. The other element of it is the Brisbane Geelong game's been pushed back, somewhat curiously, 10 minutes on Thursday night. So from 7:20 to 7:30, Gary. Yes. You were talking about this earlier, weren't you?
We were. I wanted to know why 7:10 would appear to be, we've talked about this often.
No, 7:20. It was 7:20. Yeah.
Great start time. Get it done. 7:10 would be better. 7:20 is good. 7:30, no. But we're now at 7:30.
Yeah, we are.
Why?
Yeah.
I think it's to do with Chris Fagan's 60th birthday. The players, Gary, wanted to present him with a cake prior to the game.
I'm not asking you.
They've made special.
I'm asking.
They've asked for special permission.
Just turn him off, Rooster.
And we've acquiesced.
Why is it 7:30?
Channel Wisp Brisbane directive. We want it 10 minutes later because, and it is a good.
Great reason.
It is a good reason. They want to put it on their primary channel there, which gets to more eyeballs.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
That's awesome, and it shows you how they view the game in that part of the world. However, they need to show home and away first, Gary.
Okay.
So, hey, we're talking. Come on, we're talking 10 minutes.
No, let me just. I'm going to be fair and reasonable. I'm prepared.
Unlikely.
I'm prepared for the 10 minutes. Because it goes onto the primary channel, which means more people are going to watch it, which is great. Which means that Home and Away has to go through till 7:30. Okay.
Yes.
My question for you is this. Are we then going to have 10 minutes of, you know, JB and BT go, oh boy, wowee, beautiful night here at the Gabba. Let's have a look at who's playing on who. Or are we going to go 7:30, out of the diner, bounce of the ball?
I think that's what Channel Wisp in Brisbane would like. They would like to have a bit of a lead in and maybe a period of a few minutes. The AFL not so keen on that. They want to start at 7:30 on the dot. So this might mean that it might end.
Elf's going to go.
Flame and Mungrel.
Hey.
Flame and Hell.
Listen to you over there. Mildred. Your pre-games on Fox go for 2.5 hours.
Flame and Hell, Mildred. I've got to go. It's the bounce of the ball at the Gabba.
And then literally bang.
Bang. Boy, goodness gracious me. Can you believe that?
Flame and Hell. I'm throwing the bristle.
So indeed. So it's going to be a tight turnaround. Let's watch the start of this game on Thursday.
I'll be watching, don't worry.
I wonder if they've stuck to 7:30 on the schedule, and I wonder if it'll start at 7:30. I wonder if it might just be a little.
Well, you think there might be a little bit of a game creep?
Maybe there'll be a bit of a creep.
A little 2-minute ad maybe just jammed in there to pay the Wisps' salary.
Last thing they want to do is aggravate people out there.
Hey, it's on the primary channel into Brisbane, which is a great
awesome result. So
we wait. Are you doing the pregame on Fox this Thursday night or Friday night?
Flaming hell, I hope so. I'm going to do my best Al Stewart if I am.
One of those short 2-hour editions, or how long is it going to go
for
this time?
Oh, I think we might have hit a nerve, boys. Ting, hear that? Ting, ting, ting. That's a nerve being hit.
And while this is all ongoing, the Western Bulldogs are in lockdown, obviously, in Perth's Joondalup Resort for that week leading into their game against West Coast. So the players haven't spotted Bevo's guitar yet, but they had a trivia night last night, so they're trying to keep it fresh, the Western Bulldogs. They're trying to keep their players enthused and up and about.
Hey, just on that point, Gary, I meant to ask you this a couple of days ago. Yes. If you were the Bulldogs, okay, this is just a hypothetical. You look at the West Coast Eagles, all their stars are coming back. They're going to be at full strength, the West Coast Eagles. You're on the road. This time of the year, you've pretty much got your spot in the top eight. It's going to be sorted out. Mm. Would you have considered maybe resting a few players for this?
I think you did ask me this on air, didn't
you? No, I didn't ask you this on air. We talked about it off air. Would you have considered that?
No, I wouldn't have.
And then given opportunities to... They've got a lot of other players that aren't getting a game at the moment because they can't break into the team.
Yeah.
Great opportunity to have a look at them, put them out there under real pressure on the road against the West Coast Eagles. Well, would you have considered it at all?
No, because I think a top four spot is still very much in the balance. So I don't think you can afford to go in with anything other than your best. Having said that, maybe the ribcage of Aaron Norton might have... I don't know how bad that injury is, by the way, but they've taken him. But no, in answer, I'd be trying to win.
Has he sounded you out for some advice on how to recover from the rib?
It's not, I don't think it's buckled.
It's not buckled.
If it was buckled, he wouldn't. Right. He'd be out for a month.
There was a VFL game down that way, speaking of Aaron Norton, on Friday night before Aaron Norton and the Dogs took to the field, and it featured two players who can't get a game for their respective sides. Now, Jordan Clark was one. We know his situation. He had 25 disposals and he kicked 3 goals, and he was chased pretty hard, the West Australian, last year, given he'd played only the 3 games before the captain, Joel Selwood, played a pretty big part in him staying put. He's contracted until 2022. There is renewed interest out West, don't worry about that. And he's again out of the side and will be tempted again by the prospect of greater opportunity. But there was a player on the other side who's become the subject of some interest from rival clubs as well. His name is Patrick Lipinski of the Western Bulldogs. Now, he had 36 possessions and he kicked 3 goals. He's been out of Luke Beveridge's side since round 11. Now, unlike Clark, Lipinski is out of contract at the end of this season. That Western Bulldogs midfield, that half-forward group, is so incredibly deep. Lipinski's struggling to earn a recall, and that's without Josh Dunkley in the side, without Adam Treloar still to come back in. Now, it's a credit to the Bulldogs recruiting. Lipinski is a lifelong Western Bulldogs supporter, so we're not suggesting the Dogs are going to let him go, but rival clubs are knocking, and like Clark, they're offering more opportunity, or they will be.
Mm.
So these are the temptations players face all the time. And Sam Petrevski-Seaton is the other one, frozen out of that Carlton side since round 8, sent back to the VFL to play as a midfielder forward, which is what Blues fans have been crying out for a long time. He's been stationed at halfback for so long. He's out of contract. He does love Carlton. He loves the club. He isn't the homesick type. There's no yearning to get back to WA, but his camp are assessing his options and a potential home elsewhere should the Blues look to move him on. And it might depend, Tim, on who coaches the side or what assistant coaches are employed at Carlton next year when it comes to his standing in that lineup.
What do you know about Jack Billings and the story that's sort of out and about this morning about he and his move from St Kilda, or a possible move from St Kilda elsewhere?
Yeah, well, he's been a talking point for much of the first half of this season because he's a restricted free agent, and we know what sort of baggage comes with that. He is pretty well remunerated at the Saints, being paid north of $700,000 a season there. So obviously he's a restricted free agent. Saints would have a right to match, but do they look to get a better foothold in the draft given they've got a first-round pick and then the next pick doesn't come until the third round? We know the capital they've laid out there to bring in players from other clubs in recent times. So Jack Billings is one that rival clubs have found pretty hard to assess and to value, given he's played forward. He could have been All-Australian in 2017. He'd kick straight. And then he's played wing. He's been playing through a foot injury, which has sort of dulled his performance.
They get compensation if he leaves. How's that all work?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a restricted free agent. So if they can match it and they force him to stay, or they get compo, depending on what he is paid by his rival club.
So if it's a big deal and...
First rounder, if it's a big deal.
They get compensation in the first round.
Yeah.
They might look at it.
I think one of the great suggestions of all time has just come through on the temper text. Channel Wisp should get the Wisp to do another cameo on Home and Away in the storyline. Yes. I could walk straight off the Home and Away set onto the Gabba and then present the game.
bounce the ball.
Why hasn't somebody at the network thought of that?
Old mate, whisper.
I'm going to ring Lewis right now in the ad break. Stay right there, Field Marshal. There's more to talk to you about. It was Joel Selwood's situation, the Hawthorn boxing situation, and a couple of other. Lee Matthews had some interesting things to say about David Teague as well. The conversation started for the Kia Sorento Drive Car of the Year.
Stone the flaming Crosby! Come back here, you little mongrel! Flaming mongrel!
Peter Jackson, half-yearly clearance sale. Merino wool suits from $359, up to 60% off store-wide. Kogan credit cards. No annual fees, amazing rewards, and complimentary Kogan First membership.
Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
And the Field Marshal is in rare form and good drive form. Did you do a segment about who should you drop on the drive show? This person wants to know, do you think that's fair game given the mental health situation?
Yeah. I thought it was. Players are dropped each and every week. I think we framed it the right way. We didn't get too scared. It wasn't our opinion. It was the listener's opinion. Who needs to have a spell at your side during the week?
Okay.
I think there was plenty of positive on the show yesterday afternoon.
This one too, regarding ground conditions of years gone by. Trainers would come around and cut our bootlaces with scissors after the game. The Merri Creek mud made it impossible to undo them. Can you remember those days, Gary, when it was almost impossible to get your bootlace undone?
And if
although you would have had somebody that did
if you put the boots in front of the fire after the game, you get a hammer and chisel out to get the stuff off. And yes, I agree with everyone. I haven't nailed my elf. I haven't watched Home Away for a long time. I'm going to go and do some serious elf work on and see if I can get that right.
It's Stone the Flame and Crows, Gary.
Right, I've been told that in no uncertain terms.
I want to get your verdict on something and you as well, Tim, and it concerns Joel Selwood and what's accidental and what's clumsy and what's deliberate. So Chris Scott launched a fierce defence of his captain yesterday, didn't he?
After
two incidents against the Bulldogs that actually Collingwood Premiership captain Tony Shaw labelled, quote-unquote, two of the worst things you can do on a football field.
There's worse things. Your spitting's worse.
Yeah, probably is.
Yep.
Selwood was fined $1,000 for punching Bailey Dale in the head while he was on the ground. That one's beyond question, and he did put his hand up for that one. And he was then given a $2,000 fine for what Scott described as an accidental, stomp's a bit strong, step on Taylor Giray's leg in a marking contest when Taylor Giray hit the ground. Now, most of us are prepared to take that at face value, that if he says it's an accident, it is an accident.
Did you think it was an accident?
I wanted to ask you two the same
question. Yeah, no, I thought that one was.
I thought that was an accident.
But I read somewhere where Taylor Duray didn't think it was an accident. Is that right?
Well, Taylor Duray joined us on Drive yesterday afternoon, and we thought the elephant in the room, we'll just get it out of the way straight away, and we asked him.
Look, as Chris Scott mentioned, sometimes we have to own up to our mistakes, and he managed to own up on one of them. I think Chris is trying to make some excuses maybe for the second. Things happen in footy. There's no hard feelings, but we just move on. You got to cop your punishment, and then you go to the next week.
Didn't look.
So Chris Scott trying to make excuses. I think no doubt he wanted to say more, but he stopped there.
When we talked about it Monday, we raised the point that we would like to hear him talk. Him being Joel Selwood.
Yeah, because he's also the ambassador for
someone raised that with
the
us.
Junior kids.
Said, well, it would be a good thing if we get Joel to step up and say, yeah, this is we shouldn't be doing this. I'm looking at the step one again. I think that was an accident. I don't think that was deliberate.
He knows whether it's an accident. We have to take that at face value.
The other one, then he has to be held to account for that. Mm. And, yeah, I would like because Chris Scott said he's owned it, which, again, I believe, but we haven't heard him come out and say that, have we?
No, he hasn't spoken publicly.
I don't know if I've missed that or not.
Maybe internally he has. I think we all agree that he's an icon of the game, is he not?
100%.
And I think we all would agree that he's had more positive publicity over the journey of his career from media commentators than 100%. Probably any other player playing the game currently.
Yeah.
And I don't think that this tarnishes his reputation in any way. But then there would be other people that will have other opinions. You know what happens sometimes in all this is that it gets muddied with, you know, the commentary around the game and the social media commentary around the game as well. And there are fans out there that just have formed this view about Joel Selwood and they'll never change their view.
And that's okay. People are going to – that's exactly right, Tim. They're going to form the view and they're not going to change. So we can just have our opinion, honestly or not. And our honest opinion, you choose to believe it or not.
Mm. Yep, 100%. Yep. Hey, Lee Matthews made some interesting comments last night.
Yeah, yes.
Did you listen to this?
No, I haven't, but I read it, so I'd like to hear it. Great, respected, and revered voice of football.
if there was a big in-depth review being taken on the area you're responsible for, then I think, yeah, you say, thank you, my time's up. You haven't got the faith in me anymore, so my time's up.
Is he talking specifically then about David Teague at Carlton? So
yes.
If you're reviewing the whole coaching panel, then you say, my time's up, I'll leave. Had Bomber Thompson done that, though, he would have left Richmond. He would have left Geelong at that time. And
no, the difference here, sorry if I can jump in, is that Lee is saying if you go to an external review.
Okay, then. Well, Damien Hardwick would have left.
Okay, well, So with Geelong, it was internal. So they said.
So he's saying if it's only. Okay,
yeah,
well.
So he's saying if you're going outside, you're almost conceding.
Okay, I thought he was just saying if you're actually reviewing a whole coaching panel.
Then. Lee went on to say when you're having an external review, and I'm quoting him here, you're basically saying to the whole senior management that you guys don't know what you're talking about. We need other people to come in and judge what you're doing. So he said he would say thanks, but no thanks. I'm out straight away. You've coached him. Can you imagine putting yourself in that position? Surely you fight until you've squeezed every last drop.
Yeah, but then, you know, like I walked away from the coaching position because I thought that there would be other people out there better able to do the job than what I was doing at the time. So sometimes you just got to be honest about your own position, I think. Don't you? Like we all think that coaches have to sit there until they get sacked. But if you think you're not doing the job and you're not doing the job well enough and maybe you're not best suited to this and you haven't got the right answers for the rebuild or whatever it might be, then I think the right thing and the honest thing to do is to look at yourself first and say, okay, well, I'm not the right person to do this.
Yeah. But Lee's saying that David hasn't arrived at that point. Lee's saying that the club have arrived at that point by getting an external group of people to come in and review the football club. And therefore, if you're the coach, you're looking at that and saying, well, you clearly don't think I know what I'm doing.
That's
so
right.
I'm out.
That's right. But, you know, like I was answering Sam's question about, you know, you stay there and you hang in there as long as you possibly can. But I don't necessarily agree with that. Although people do. Like, that's the way that this particular position operates most of the time.
We've got Olympics around the corner, Wisp, and we need to have a chat about that and some other stuff that's kicking on. Our go-to man, he has to be Steve Monaghan. He's been to four of them, if you don't mind. I reckon he starts to get itchy feet. He's probably been for a run around the lake in Lake Wendouree in Ballarat. He joins us this morning. G'day, Mona.
Hi, Gary. How are you, mate? Now, I looked out the window. It was a bit windy and thought, maybe not this year. I don't think I'm going to my fifth Olympics. I don't need to jump out of bed, do I? Okay.
Well, not at this stage. Will you go for a trot at some stage today?
Oh, yeah. Certainly try and get out. I'll either get on the mountain bike or run. So I'm probably running about 60k a week at the moment, so most days, which is not too bad for this old aching, tired, broken down body.
hey, Monas, we've been talking about broken down, aching old bodies. What do you do for your broken down, aching old body and your knee joints?
I try to look after myself. I'm actually going to Geelong today to see a practitioner down there, so I still get sort of treatment and physio, massage, and stretch a little bit more than I ever did. I wasn't a great stretcher, it'd be fair to say, but I'm doing a bit of that, you know, glute activation and core stability work and those sorts of things now that I can honestly say, you know, I used to think was pretty, what was it? Well, load of baloney, probably, that I've actually realised that I need to do that sort of stuff. Well, I was never really injured. You know, I had good physio and my body sort of behaved itself and I looked after it pretty well. But as you get older and you're not quite as diligent, then you've got to do those things. So it allows me to run less and, you know, exercise still as much. So that's a good thing.
That is a great thing. You know, the stop-start nature of these Olympic Games, obviously they weren't held last year. There's been all this, you know, concern about whether or not they go ahead again this year. From the athlete's perspective, how difficult can you put yourself in the mind of somebody that's currently preparing for an Olympic Games? How difficult has this been, this preparation for them?
Oh, unbelievably difficult. You know, you prepare, we always prepared, and athletes will be doing that now. Where some athletes will have had a 4-year plan, but certainly will have had a, you know, a 12-month plan. And when you suddenly halfway through that, someone says, oh, no, we're just going to back them up another 12 months. Well, that absolutely throws you. So you've just got to hopefully be in control of what you can do, your own training, and then you just let the powers that be make the decisions. But it was a very anxious time for athletes when it was whether it was going to go on or not. And when it was delayed, it was probably a bit of a relief. And they sort of said, oh, well, okay, at least we know now it's going to be in 12 months' time. But now as it's getting closer, you know, a lot of athletes have had trouble getting to qualification and they're not sure, and it's, and so it's really about selection more so than whether the games are going to go on or not. So, you know, we're getting pretty, I think it's about 31 days or something. It's just around the corner. And, you know, I want the focus to be on athletes being selected. We've got so much other stuff happening sometimes we lose sight of that.
And now distance running, and this is not our area of expertise, you would be surprised, Mona, but it would appear that our distance running stocks are as high as they've been for quite some time.
They're going unbelievably well. They're incredibly strong. Men and women are just qualifying. We've got men's 1500, Stewie McSwain and Jess Hull. We've just got people qualifying left, right and centre. It's been fantastic. The depth in distance running in Australia at the moment is, I would say, as good as it's ever been. You know, full complement of men's and women's teams in the marathon and just across the distance. We have so many people selected that people are swapping different events to qualify. Jeff Risley qualifying the other day for his fourth Olympics, you know. So it's just been terrific. You know, it's really great to see. It's exciting being on the sidelines and seeing the sport in such good shape.
What do you put that down to, the depth?
I think probably the 12 months has allowed people to focus, to get a bit more training done and just to focus really on races and less time trialling and more qualifying. So just more competitive races. We've had lots of races here in Australia that people have qualified in. So just up the ante a bit in local competition, people racing more and getting out racing head to head, you know, yep, getting out there. And then obviously, you know, there's, once one person does it, I reckon someone like Stewie, and it happened with Craig Mottram, you know, once he mixed it with the Africans, then everyone said, oh, actually, hey, we can run against these guys. We can be competitive. We can be successful. We've seen the Inge Britson family do it in Norway where they've mixed it with the Africans. Suddenly there's confidence. And I just sense there's real confidence in amongst Australian distance running at the moment that we can be competitive. Why can't we be? And no, America got a couple of uni, university students from America running well, and come on, Jess Hull was through that system. So it's just all, everything's just, plants are aligning and it's going well.
And the time zone, does that work like incredibly favourably for the Australian athletes as well?
It does, but unfortunately, again, it's, you know, you win on some, you lose on the others. The weather will be really warm. So we've had lots of teams going to hotter climates to be acclimatized. So the 2 hours is fantastic, so we don't have to worry about jet lag. And that will have a negative effect on a lot of other countries coming to the Olympics. But the actual temperature change, you know, where Southern Hemisphere, obviously coming out of our winter and into hot, you know, the marathon's been changed up to Sapporo for that reason, because it was going to be so hot and humid in Tokyo. So, you know, the weather will be an issue, but not for all sports, obviously, but for athletics it might be.
Steve Monaghetti's joining us here. The Olympics not too far away. Mono, I read this fascinating story, for me it was anyway, in The Australian on the weekend about Nike and how they developed these super spikes and how much of an advantage it's reported they're giving to their athletes, so much so that for Reebok and Brooks, who are, you know, we all know how competitive these sporting brands are, they're allowing their athletes to wear the Nike product in the Olympic trials because they've conceded that they haven't got their technology up to the speed that Nike have. How much of a difference is this shoe making in the world of athletics right now?
I knew you were going to mention this, Gary, so I avoided the equipment thing, helping runners qualify and that sort of stuff. But that is amazing. I saw that as well. And that is incredible to think that we would get to that stage where other shoe brands are letting their athletes wear a competitor's brand because, to deny that advantage. I actually had the Alphaflies on last night. I've got a pair. They're the road shoes, and I'm running, hopefully getting to the Gold Coast for the half in a couple of weeks, and I wanted to try them out. And they definitely make you run faster. Even this, as I say, these old legs get a bit of bounce in them from the shoes. So, and the spikes seem to be making a difference. You know, we've noticed that the women's 10K was broken a couple of times within a few days just last week. So there is certainly some technology there that's helping the sport. But, you know, I think if more people are qualifying, and, you know, some of the qualifyings, Gary, still go on like top 50 times in the world. So it's not like the qualifying's any easier. You still got to go off those times. So the actual qualifying times certainly for the men and women in athletics are as hard as they've ever been. You know, I would not have qualified for any team except for the marathon at these games. So that's how hard the qualifying times are. So, you know, you've got to give every advantage to athletes we can. It's great for the sport. We're talking about it.
Yep.
And, you know, recreational runners are out there and enjoying the benefits of it as well. So we can all use it, and it's just incredible that there's such a focus on our sport, and I think it's a great thing. I might be sponsored by one of them, maybe. But anyway.
Are they significantly better than the Dunlop volleys you wore in your first Olympics?
That's right. They are just slightly better, but they're clunkier, they're heavier, they're bigger. They're against, you know, I love light shoes. I was running, I'm thinking, gee, I don't want to be carrying army boots. If I'm running 42K, I want the lightest shoes you can possibly get. But these are not light. I actually weighed them last night. The racing shoes I had are 150 grams. The Alpha Flies I had on my feet last night were 230 grams. There's 80 grams you're carrying, but you run faster in them because of the spring-like effect and the bounce back that you get from the foam. So it's incredible. So I've got to have sort of a mind shift for me to wear them.
But yeah. Do you feel that straight away? As soon as you take that first step, you feel the difference straight away?
He bounded 8 metres.
I guess the fact that you've entered for the high jump probably answers that question.
Yeah, but it's just got that bounce on. You know, as I say, my legs they don't have a lot of bounce in them. So when you put them on, you definitely feel like you're up. You know, you feel like you're bouncing off your toes. You just got more sort of push off on the front of your feet. So they've certainly got that spring in them that I didn't notice from racing flats that I wore. As I say, they were light. And, you know, I used to get that thumping and that sort of pounding from the roads because my shoes were so light. And that would affect your legs and take a long time for recovery. To recover. There is no doubt that these shoes allow you to recover so much better. So, yeah, that's the other thing. If you're running a heat in a final and you've got shoes that you're recovering quicker in between, then that's a good thing too.
Do you reckon you put the same technology in a football boot then? Do you think they might be working on something similar to that for AFL football or other footy codes around the world?
Yeah, well, you'd be, you know, the amount of running that you're doing in women's and men's football now, you would think there's no reason why. You know, it's obviously, you know, then you've got the spikes. How do you put the spikes or the studs in the underwear? The springs are aware. But they're doing it with the spikes. So, yeah, and it will expand. Hopefully, you know, it gets to the general population and we can all benefit from it. So that's the shoe company wants it to become mainstream. So I'm sure they're looking at it.
How's a different monitor? Yeah, you know, when you talk about technology and trying to push the boundaries and, you know, trying to, you know, get every advantage you can, how's it different to the swimming suits that all of a sudden, you know, they developed and full-length body suits that were helping people get through the water and in the end they had to legislate against them? What's the difference?
Yeah, well, I suppose not a lot really. You know, that was aerodynamic through the water. And if you think about it, when you run, the only things that contact the ground of your feet. So it's quite significant to have a benefit in those. So to some degree they are, but I think, you know, the fact that if everybody can use them, then, you know, for us, running's a pretty simple sport, let's be honest. So any equipment improvement, you know, is minimal anyway. You still got to be able to run. And, you know, I've been quite, you know, I don't like people having an advantage to run faster, but what I do love is if it gets people out racing more, you know, head-to-head racing, and we see faster times out of that racing, and that's a good thing. And as I tell people, it's not going to change the outcomes of the Olympic medals. It'll just mean that they're faster, more competitive races. So the same person will still win whether they've got the shoes on or not, because in running it comes down. You've got to have ability as well. I hate to say it, Tim and Gary, but if you put those shoes on, you're still
going to
actually go out and train.
Oh, damn. I was going to take it up again. Hey, we also got you on because you're the ambassador for the Sports Excellence Scholarship Fund. We love the sound of this. It provides funding for kids chosen to represent the state or their country in various sports but might not have the financial means to cover things like travel and uniforms and accommodation and everything else. So it's a fantastic initiative, this, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And get onto the website, sesf.org.au. And, you know, I've been fortunate to be involved for a few years and mentoring some of those kids has been incredibly enlightening to me. I've really enjoyed it. And, gosh, you know, from Gimboola, Tim, and Kyabram via Devonport for you, Gary. You know, imagine you didn't have those opportunities.
Yeah,
and we'd like to think that everyone who's got the ability and gets selected, you know, wouldn't have hated it if they can't go because their families can't afford it. So, and we're trying to roll it out nationally. So if there's anyone's looking for corporate partners, partnership, then jump on this website, get in contact, and you're helping young athletes, so it's a good thing.
100%.
Who knows, they might be off to the Olympics, and if we get those Brisbane Games in 2032, you know, or leading into Paris and LA, these are the types of kids we could see donning the green and gold as a result of your support.